Bhagavad Lila, 10th canto. Krishna teases Rukmini. Once Krishna was reclining on his bed in Dwarka. As she was relaxing on Queen Rukmini's bed, and Queen Rukmini was fanning him, and her maidservants were surrounding her. This chapter describes how Krishna grinds the fragrant camphor-like heart of Rukmini with the pestle of his words. The lovely chaste qualities of Rukmini will become manifest as a result of Krishna's apparently insensitive words. Just as camphor's fragrance becomes manifest when crushed on a grinding stone. Rukmini is personally fanning Krishna for two reasons. One is that he's the husband, her husband, as it says here, Patim. Jagat Gurum Patim Paryacharad. And the other reason is that Krishna is the spiritual master of the universe, Jagat Guru, Jagat Guru Pati, Dwarkadish. So the Guru is honored, the King is honored, the Guru is honored by waving a yak tail fan in front of him, or what we say, a chamara fan. So Krishna is indeed the Adi Guru, Jagat Guru of the entire Jagat. And he is, of course, the husband of Rukmini. To prove that Krishna is disturbing Rukmini's mood of loving service, which is about to be described as his pastime and nothing else, Shukadeva introduces the Leela in verse 2 by describing that the creation destruction of the world are also Krishna's Leela. Leelaya Vishvam Srijat Yut Yat Nyavatishvara. Though Krishna is unborn, he appeared in the Yadu dynasty to protect and maintain the principles of religion. It can never be Krishna's desire to stop the prem seva of his beloved devotee, but rather he acts in such a way to strengthen that prema. Rukmini's bedroom of her palace was extremely beautiful. There was a canopy above the bed, ornamented with brilliant strings of pearls hanging from the edges. And effulgent jewels in the columns served as lamps. There were flower garlands hanging here and there, attracting swarms of bees to drink the sweet nectar of jasmine and other flowers. The spotless rays of the moon shone through the lattice windows of her bedroom. Aguru incense drifted out of the window's holes, and the scent of the Parijat grove carried the mood of a garden into the bedroom. Dwarkadish was reclining upon an opulent pillow on Rukmini's bed, which was as soft and white as a foam of milk, and Rukmini was serving her husband, the Supreme Lord of all the worlds. Jagatam Ishvaram Patim. Shukadeva Goswami in verse 3 through 6 describes the beauty of Rukmini's palace in Dwarka to show that everything was perfectly arranged by Rukmini to please Krishna with her loving service. The room was splendid with shining jewels and a canopy adorned with hanging clusters of dazzling pearls. This pastime took place The ruddy rays of the rising moon were entering through the holes of the lattice windows, and clouds of aguru incense were streaming out of the windows. There, Rukmini attentively served Krishna, who was lying on the best of beds, Kashiputtame. So this is the word in the verse, Kashipu, and Uttam Kashipu, which means a really especially good, soft mattress and bed. We have our Haranya Kashipu, so Kashipu means mattress and bed. Krishna was being fanned by Queen Rukmini with a yak tail fan with a jeweled handle. She was worshipping him. Rukmini's hand was adorned with rings, bangles. She looked resplendent, standing near Krishna and fanning her. Her jeweled ankle bells tinkled, and her necklace glittered, reddened by the kunkum from her breasts, which were covered by the end of her sari. On her hips she wore a priceless belt. Rukmini appeared most attractive with her jeweled ankle bells as she stood next to Krishna. She held a chamara whisk in her hand, which was adorned with golden rings and bracelets. As Rukmini fanned Krishna with broad strokes of the chamara, her jeweled bangles, waist bells, ankle bells tinkled sweetly. Rukmini looked extremely beautiful with her necklace glittering red from the kunkum on her breast. Seeing Rukmini, who was more beautiful than even Lakshmi and Vaikuntha, Krishna spoke. Vishnu says, when Vishnu appears as a demigod, Lakshmi takes the form of a demigoddess. And when Vishnu appears as a human being, she takes a human-like form. Lakshmi can thus assume a form suitable to the form that the Lord assumes. As Krishna is more beautiful than the Lord of Vaikuntha, so Rukmini is more beautiful than Lakshmi. Krishna was smiling slightly while thinking, it is proper that Rukmini has assumed a form appropriate to my form. Now I will joke with her and hear what she says. The four directions were beautified by Rukmini's charming, smiling face, which was decorated with curling locks of hair, earrings, and a locket on her neck. Vishnath explains in the next few verses about why did Rukmini choose him. At this time, his mentality was, when I gave Rukmini one flower from the heavenly Parijat tree, Satyabhama became so full of anger and pride that I could not pacify her even by falling at her feet. Only when I gave Satyabhama a whole Parijat tree was she satisfied. Rukmini, however, did not show any anger even when she saw me give Satyabhama a whole tree. So how will I be able to taste the sweetness of Rukmini's anger when anger is not possible in her? Because she is always sober and speaks sweet words. Thus Krishna considered and he decided, if I speak like this to Rukmini, I will be able to provoke her anger. This is what some authorities say. Others explain Krishna's speech to Rukmini, that Krishna spoke as he did to see how his beloved Rukmini would respond if he tried to uproot the tree of her prema. Thus Krishna said, my dear beloved, you think that you are very intelligent. Despite your being completely endowed without all transcendental qualities, actually, you are ignorant of your own welfare. Therefore, you are not intelligent. Now just listen as I explain this. Krishna then speaks in verse 11. You are the daughter of a king, and I am the penniless son of Vasudev. Why did you choose me as your husband? You cannot say that you accepted me because there was no alternative. For many kings wanted you as their wife, nor can you say that those kings were inferior in wealth, beauty, and qualities to me. For they were endowed with fabulous wealth, power, beauty, and courage, like the Lokapalas, planetary rulers. They were not devoid of wealth and enjoyment like Runti Dev and others. You cannot say that they were far away because they came to your place to request you. Nor can you say that your relatives were opposed, for your brother and father wanted to give you to them. He also failed to notice my cowardly nature, a great fault in one born as a Kshatriya. I made enemies with many strong kings and have only a few friends like Arjun. Moreover, being a Yadav, it was not proper for me to be a king. Although I was entitled to the throne after killing Kamsa, I abandoned that status and gave the royal throne to my grandfather Ugrasen. Krishna said to Rukmini, "Oh, fine-browed lady, pious women who follow the path of men like us, whose course of action is unclear, who are not strictly religious or irreligious, who sometimes steal others' wives, who at other times follow the rules of Vedic conduct, and who do not even follow the social behavior, since I insulted your brother even in your presence, must have always suffer. If some do not suffer, that is to their credit. As for me, however, I have no interest at all in material sense gratification. According to Niti Shastra, my dear, it is not proper that you are my wife. Since your father and grandfather are very wealthy, you have abundant personal wealth, whereas my father, Vasudev, has no wealth. The only wealth I have is what little I have been able to earn on my own. You hail from a great dynasty, whereas I do not have a good family background being a Yadav. You have jurisdiction over so many towns, such as Kundina and Vidarbha State, whereas I only have Dwarka and Anarta State. You are fair-complexioned, gory, and I am black, Sham. Your prosperity, Bhava, is assured, whereas mine is uncertain, because I have many enemies. Those who are equal in wealth, birth, beauty, power, and prosperity. Krishna said, you have accepted me, Rukmini, as your husband, because you are short-sighted, adirga, samikshaya, and have not considered the overall picture. Moreover, what has happened. But since you are still in the prime of youth, there's no loss even now. You should use your intelligence and choose a suitable Kshatriya husband. Rukmini may ask, then why did you take me as your wife? Krishna will reply, I took you because Shishupal, Shalva, Jarasana, and Dantavakra and your brother, Rukmini, were my enemies. Devi, I kidnapped you just to dispel the ignorance of those conceited kings who were intoxicated with their power. You should not worry that I will be unhappy if you accept another man as your husband. I am indifferent to both the body and home. Therefore, I remain just as a witness without action, like a flaming lamp. By speaking like this, Krishna broke Rukmini's pride of thinking herself. Because Krishna was constantly with Rukmini, Rukmini thought, even though I am unfit to be Krishna's wife, by his own good qualities, Krishna made me his most fortunate wife. Thus I have acquired such a husband who is an ocean of good qualities. Rukmini had never before heard such unpleasantries from her husband. So she became frightened, and a tremor arose in her heart. She began to cry. With her tender foot, effulgent with the reddish glow of her toenails, Rukmini scratched the ground, and tears darkened by her eye makeup sprinkled her kumkum-reddened breast. There Rukmini stood, face downwards, her voice choked up by extreme sorrow. Ati dukha rudha vak. These are symptoms of her anxiety. She scratched the ground with her extremely tender foot. Rukmini became very unhappy from hearing these unpleasant words of Krishna. Due to fear that Krishna might leave her, and sadness, Rukmini became morose. Her intelligence thus destroyed, Rukmini could not understand that Krishna was only joking. Rukmini's bracelet slipped off her wrists because her body became thin due to the pain of impending separation. Then she lost consciousness, viklavdiya, and fainted on the floor of the palace bedroom. She attained the ninth state of bhav, ecstatic love. In this pastime, Rukmini experienced the septic bhavs, devotional ecstasies ranging from being stunned, stumba, to dissolution or fainting, pralaya. Rukmini could not understand the depth of Krishna's joking because she was bound by pure love of God, prema bandhanam. As Krishna prema increases to anurag, intense attraction, the devotee, who is the shelter of that anurag, feels more and more humble and wretched at every moment. Overwhelmed by delusion, he thinks, I am not worthy of Krishna, and therefore I deserve to be rejected by him. Seeing that his queen, Rukmini, had fainted, fallen unconscious on the ground, Krishna quickly got down from the bed, and he manifested four arms simultaneously to lift Rukmini, embrace her, wipe her face, and retie her hair. So each arm was doing something different. One arm hand was wiping her face, one was retying her loosened hair, and the other two were lifting her, embracing her. Krishna wiped Rukmini's tear-filled eyes and her breasts, which were stained with tears of sorrow. Bhagavan Sri Krishna said, O Vaidarbhi Rukmini, do not be displeased with me. I know that you are fully devoted to me. I only spoke in jest, dear lady, because I wanted to hear what you would say. However, if you give up your body now, how will I be able to bear such a great burden? I will then have to give up my body also. Having already created problems for you and me by making such false displays of love by embracing me and wiping away my tears, do you want to cause me further suffering? This is Rukmini. Fearing such a response from Rukmini, Krishna spoke this verse, O Vaidarbhi, do not be pleased with me. In this instance or exchange, Rukmini might reply like this, Oh, I am not displeased with you, who are the most merciful, but upon hearing you say that I should go to another man for my own benefit, after having suffered sorrow by staying beside you, I fainted in bliss. Why did you wake me from that swoon? If I had remained in that state a moment longer, both you and I could have attained the supreme nirvana. Fearing such sarcastic words from Rukmini, Krishna then said, I know that you are fully dedicated to me, having no other goal than me, Rukmini. Then why did you speak such harsh words? Krishna, I was desirous of hearing some crooked words from you, O beautiful one. So I spoke some joking untrue words. Then Krishna gives some reasons for joking with Rukmini by saying, I wanted also to see your face and lips trembling in loving anger, the reddish corners of your eyes throwing sidelong glances, and the line of your beautiful eyebrows knit in a frown, your eyes showing angry sidelong glances. If that was Krishna's desire, then why did Rukmini not comply and show anger instead? Krishna's Ichha Shakti, desire potency, is under his control, but Prema controls Krishna. Consequently, next to Prema, his Ichha Shakti has no power. In order to increase Krishna's ecstasy, Prema sometimes goes against the desire of the Lord. That is the situation here. In the Stahibhav, permanent loving mellow of Madhur Ras, conjugal Ras, Rukmini and Krishna and other consorts display seven types of love: Prema, pure love; Sneha, affection; Man, jealous anger; Pranaya, attachment; Rag, passion; Anurag, intense attachment; and Bhava, ecstatic love. At the proper moment, one of these seven Stahibhavs will manifest and become prominent. Well, these are actually seven types of love. Thus, when Rukmini was fanning Krishna, the Stahibhav Anurag was arisen. Because it was predominated by the Sanchari Bhav of humility, Dainyam, Rukmini experienced remorse, anxiety, and bewilderment. However, she did not experience affectionate anger or the casting of sidelong glances at Krishna. These symptoms would arise later when the Stahibhav of Man would appear. Because Rukmini's affection is Grita Sneha, ghee-like affection, her Man does not manifest in the extreme. Satyabhama, however, with her Madhur Sneha, honey-like affection, exhibits Man even in Anurag, and gives Krishna immense pleasure with her trembling lips, angry glasses, and furrowed brows. Rukmini might object by saying, Prabhu, you become unhappy with my services such as fanning, but derive pleasure when I give up those services and speak angry words to you. You are not pleased to see my smiling face, but you are pleased to see my face dried up in extreme misery, discolored by anger, and displaying horrible grimaces. Why do you act like this? And then Krishna answers in this verse, householders derive the greatest pleasure from joking like this with their beloved wives. Taking the same statements by which Krishna previously denigrated himself and put himself down and praised Rukmini, Rukmini is now praising Krishna by giving an opposite meaning to those arguments. So Krishna inquired in verse 11 in his joking conversation, which devastated Rukmini while she was fanning him. Krishna posited, why did you select us who are not equal to you? Rukmini said, O lotus-eyed Lord, it is true that I can never be equal to you. You are the Supreme Lord, endowed with six opulences, and are the supreme controller of three separate deities. I am a mundane woman controlled by the three gunas. Therefore, I am very satisfied. Therefore, I am vastly inferior to you. So how can I even imagine is equal to you? Although Rukmini is the transcendental goddess of fortune, due to her extreme humility, she is identifying herself with Krishna's external energy, which is in fact her expansion. Text 12, Krishna said that out of fear of the kings, we took shelter in the ocean, which means Krishna is saying, I'm fearful. Krishna responds to this verse by saying, oh, Urukram, this name indicates Krishna's fearlessness. Kram means power or sequence. It is true that actually you are fearless. You seem to have fear of the modes of nature, which are the actual rulers of this world, because they impel all living beings to act. Because you fear that your devotee will come under the influence of these modes of nature and become entangled in sense gratification, you enter the internal ocean of the hearts of the devotees, and you remain as the omniscient supersoul to protect your devotees. Krishna may object. What is the proof that I reside in the hearts of my devotees? Of course, this question was answered in 3.9.5 of the Bhagavatam when Brahma said, Naipashi nat ridiyam buruhat sapum sam. For your pleasure, my Lord, you are never separated from the lotus of the devotees' hearts. And the Navi Yogendra Havi Rishi said, Pranaya Rasanaya Tritangri Padma Sabhavati Bhagavata Pradana Ukta. To devotees, bind your lotus feet in their hearts with the ropes of love. Rukmini continues, my Lord, as a super soul, you are perceived in terms of the sense objects, taste, form, sound, touch, smell. Your transcendental beauty and other qualities are perceived by your devotees through meditation. Krishna is the sole object of meditation for his devotees. And Krishna replies, but we created enmity with the powerful kings. Rukmini replies, it is the material senses which are actually powerful in this world. You take up the battle against sense gratification on the part of your devotees, and thus you constantly try to help them in their struggle for spiritual purity. In the beginning, the sadhaka realizes a little of your sweetness through meditation, but does not see you directly. It appears that you enter their hearts and go to sleep as if out of fear of the sense objects. When a devotee's attachment to you matures and he conquers the enemy's senses, he loses his attraction for the sense objects. Then you manifest yourself as if rising up from sleep. You become directly visible to the devotee and give him your full sweetness. At that time, the eternal loving relationship between you and your devotees becomes an irrevocable fact. Krishna says, we renounce the royal throne. Rukmini says, yes, that is quite proper. Your servants also give up royal positions and political posts because it gives rise to complete loss of discrimination. If they do so, what to speak of you? In text 13, Krishna jested with Rukmini by saying, women are usually destined to suffer when they stay with men whose behavior is uncertain and they pursue a path not approved by society. Rukmini said, yes, it is true, because your activities are always transcendental. They are unfathomable even to the sages. And certainly your activities are incomprehensible to the animalistic men entangled in worldly behavior. It is also true that you do not follow the customary path. Your endeavors move you through the world. Rather, I can say, it is true that you do not follow the customary path. Your endeavors transcend this world. Therefore, the endeavors of even those who follow you are also transcendental. Krishna says, we have no material possessions. This is what he said in 14. And we are dear to those who are similarly have nothing, Niskinchan, Jana, Priya. Therefore, O Slender One, the wealthy hardly ever worship me, and after all, you are a queen and royalty, Rukmini said. Yes, you are indeed Niskinchan, because the word kinchan means something. Rukmini said, you are Niskinchan in the sense that nothing is greater than you, and you are Niskinchan in the sense that you do not only have some kinchan, opulence, power, sweetness, fame, strength, knowledge, renunciation, but you possess all of these in complete measure, since you are the source of all emanations. The meaning of Niskinchan as poverty stricken does not apply to you, however, Prabhu, because Brahma and all the dearest demigods who are worshipped by others worship you. When Krishna said that wealthy people don't worship me, and she said, those materialistic men blinded by wealth, whose very life is their money, they do not know you as death, as the punisher. What to speak then of their worshipping you? And Krishna said in text 14, I am dear to those who have nothing. But here in text 37, Rukmini defeats that by saying, Brahma and other demigods, who are the wealthiest persons in the universe, regularly offer tribute to you, since you are the dearmost of the mixed devotees, Sakama Bhaktas, like Brahma. What to speak of the devotees devoid of material desires, Niskam Bhaktas? Those who do not desire to engage in anything else, acquire anything else, or inquire into anything else other than the worship of the Lord, they are called Niskinchan. Some statements in the Puranas explain that Niskinchan means the devotee of the Lord. In text 15, Krishna jested with Rukmini by saying marriage and friendship are proper between two people of equal terms who have the same wealth, birth, influence, physical appearance, and capacity for good progeny, but never between a superior and inferior. So now Rukmini replies to that. You have said that one should marry only a person equal in wealth. That is possible for others, but not for you. You are the end goal, Phalatma, of all human endeavor. The association or relation is between the served and the servitor, between Lakshmi and Narayan, between you and myself, not between a mundane man and a mundane woman who are attracted in mutual lust. In text 39, Rukmini replies to Krishna's statement in verse 16 where he said, Bhikshubi Shlagita Mudha. O fool, I am praised only by beggars. Then this verse, Rukmini explains the super excellence of being praised by beggars. Rukmini said, Prabhu, those so-called beggars, bhikshus, are actually sages in the Paramahamsa stage of life who have reached the highest level of spiritual advancement and thus given up the sannyasi rod or danda. Your powers are glorified by such bhikshus or paramahamsas. Everything becomes auspicious by praising you, the super soul of all souls. Therefore, praising you is not foolish, mudha. Rather, if you say it is foolish, you are foolish, mudha. Knowing that you yourself, that you give yourself to those in the universe who worship you, Prabhu, I have chosen you as my husband. Nevertheless, you have said, my dear Vaidarbhi, out of ignorance you have chosen me as your husband? Rukmini replies to this, This shows you did not know my intelligence in this matter. I have chosen you after rejecting lesser personalities like Brahma and Shiva, whose benedictions are all destroyed by the force of time, emanating from the movement of your eyebrows. What then to speak of my rejecting inferior persons like those kings? My dear husband, your accusation that I lack foresight indicates that you did not know of my deep insight into the situation. Actually, I chose you to be my husband because I clearly understood your true glories. In text 12, Krishna said, Vraja bhyo bibhyatta subru sumudram sharanam gatan, which means, terrified of those kings, we went to the ocean for shelter and built our palace in Dwarka. Then suddenly Rukmini manifested the sthayi bhav of man, anger. Having already hinted at Krishna's ignorance of her knowledge and foresight, Rukmini became provoked to anger by hearing Krishna glorifying other men who might have become her husband. Rukmini clearly indicates Krishna's ignorance while frowning and casting angry sidelong glances at him. Rukmini said, "Your words are foolish. Like a lion, you defeated all the other kings and took me away as your prize. It is simply foolish to say that out of fear of those same kings you went to the ocean." But, Krishna may object, earlier you said that it was true that I took shelter of the ocean out of fear. Rukmini, yes, but that was my foolishness. In verse 41, Rukmini intends to tell Krishna, Prabhu, you said that women who follow my path generally suffer. But that is also a foolish statement. You have also said that I, a king's daughter, am unintelligent and frustrated because I married you. But how can you accuse all the great enlightened kings like Bharat of being unintelligent? They were the wisest of men, yet they gave up everything to follow you and were certainly not frustrated by the result. Indeed, they all achieved the perfection of your association. In text 17, Krishna said, Devi, you should choose a more suitable husband. In text 40, 2 and 3, she replies, Rukmini said, only a woman who has never heard of your glories would take shelter of another husband. What mortal woman who has once smelled the fragrance of your lotus feet or heard your glories praised by sages who are like bees would accept anyone but you as their husband? One becomes liberated simply by hearing and chanting your glories. Anyone who does not appreciate your topics, Harikatha, such as a rakshas or a daughter of a witch, will take shelter of someone else and consequently always experience great fear. How could any sane, discriminating woman take shelter of anyone but you, my dear Lord? In text 16, Krishna said that he was bereft of all good qualities. And here Rukmini refutes that by saying Krishna's gunalayasya, the abode or reservoir of all transcendental qualities. Text 43, Rukmini said, but I am the daughter of a human. However, so after hearing about your qualities, I have taken full shelter of you. Because you are suitable as my very super soul, I should surrender to you who are most favorable to me. With a sudden appearance of the sthayi bhav, known as humility, it's actually a sanchari bhav, Rukmini, though she is eternally liberated consort of Krishna, humbly thinks of herself as an ordinary human bound by karma. Rukmini then prays for the opportunity to worship her Lord Krishna. She said, "May I attain the shelter of your lotus feet after wandering for many births. Oh, my beloved, I was bewildered by hearing about your various incarnations. I heard that when you descended as Ram, you abandoned your wife Sita, and that in this life you abandoned the gopis. Also, by hearing just now the way you have been speaking, I am experiencing delusion and various confusing doubts. Nevertheless, your lotus feet have mercifully approached your worshipper, coming of their own accord to destroy a multitude of illusions. May I surrender unto your lotus feet, which give happiness and a continuous taste of nectar to persons like us." Vishnan says, in this verse, which is 43, Rukmini is hinting that she would rather surrender to Krishna's lotus feet than his lotus face. Why? Because Krishna's lotus face contains his mouth, and from his mouth words come out, and those words that Krishna speaks sometimes emanate poison, even death-inflicting poison. At other times, Krishna's face gives life-restoring nectar, but Krishna's feet are always sweet and merciful. So therefore, she opted for Krishna's feet instead of his unpredictable lotus face. Text 44. Pointing her index finger at Krishna with jealous anger, Rukmini spoke fiery words to condemn the kings whom Krishna had praised in verse 10 of this chapter. Pointing her index finger at Krishna, Rukmini said, "These so-called great kings that you mentioned are like asses because their wives sometimes kick them. They resemble dogs because they behave inimically toward outsiders in order to protect their home. They are like cats because they eat the remnants of their wives, and they resemble slaves because they are servile in family affairs. Such kings may appear desirable to a foolish woman who has not heard or understood your unlimited glories. O destroyer of enemies, Adi Karshan, you drag my enemies like Shishupal to the kingdom of death." Then Rukmini says, 45, "A woman who fails to relish the fragrance of the honey of your lotus feet becomes totally befooled, and thus she accepts as her husband or lover a living corpse covered with skin, whiskers, nails, head hair, and body hair, and filled with flesh, bones, blood, parasites, feces, mucus, bile, and air." Vishnu says, Rukmini said, "On the authority of the Shastras, which say that one should become one's husband who can remove all fear, you alone qualify as the real husband for all women at all times. On the contrary, an ordinary materialistic husband's body is covered on the outside by skin and hair. Otherwise, it would become overwhelmed with flies and millions of other insects and vermin attracted by its foul smell and other offensive qualities. And inside, the husband's body is filled with blood, bones, feces, flesh, bile, worms, and phlegm. Any woman who thinks of this living corpse of her husband as, quote, my husband, and worships him is simply a fool. Why are they so foolish? Why are they so foolish? The honey sweetness of your lotus feet, my Lord, and the fact that you possess an eternal transcendental body, full of knowledge and bliss, is well known. Yet due to being whipped up into a tempest by the reciters of the Puranas, foolish women reject you. In text 20, Krishna said, always satisfy within ourselves, Aptakam and Atmaram. We care nothing for wives, children, and wealth. So here, 46, Rukmini replies to this statement of Krishna, which appears to show his indifference to family life. Pondering over Krishna's indifference or neutrality, Rukmini reached a state of calmness known as, or neutrality called Stan. Then submerging in an ocean of humility, she spoke this verse. Rukmini said, let me have loving attachment to your lotus feet, even if you are indifferent to me. Your indifference to me is appropriate, since you glance on the entire universe with indifference. Because you take pleasure within yourself, Atman Ratasya, Atmaram, you rarely look at me. Vishnu says, humbly identifying herself with Krishna's external material energy, which is nothing but her expansion, Rukmini says, though you do not often look at me, when you are ready to manifest the material universe, and thus begin to work through the mode of passion, which is your potency, then you will certainly glance upon me, and I will rejoice. It will be a great display of mercy for me, and I will accept it as my greatest fortune. The inner meaning of text 46, or the inner meaning of Rukmini's statement here, is as follows. Rukmini said, actually, you are very attached to me, as attested to by your own words. You said, I am also thinking about her so much that I cannot sleep at night. Yet from your statement, your recent statement here, text 20, we see that you are indifferent. Therefore, if you are attracted to me, then I must be your supreme internal potency, Sarup Shakti. Thus, even though you are self-satisfied, you take pleasure in me, your Sarup Shakti. But if I am your external material energy, then you will be indifferent to me as you are indifferent to all other material creations. In this way, you have both attitudes toward me, and I am in both kinds of relationship with you. Or else you are teaching other men about ordinary female psychology by using me as an example, since I am a woman. Having refuted everything Krishna said, Rukmini, in a gracious frame of mind, now praises the truthfulness of Krishna's statements. Thus she says, thus I do not consider your statements, my Lord, that I should marry a person of similar qualities to be false. After all, in this world, sometimes a woman becomes attracted to some man before marriage. For example, of the three daughters of the king of Kashi, Ambika, Ambalika, and Amba, Amba became attracted to Shalva. Even married women may desire newer and newer lovers. An intelligent man will not marry such a woman, for he will suffer in this life and the next. You, being omniscient, would have rejected me already if you had known me to be like this. Krishna replied, we joked with you, wanting to hear your words. He speaks the plural here because some of Rukmini's maidservants also wanted to hear. Or the plural is used by saying we, to indicate that Krishna's sense of hearing desired to enjoy Having been the object of my jokes, you interpreted what I said in another way, which is most certainly true. What benediction can I, who am supremely satisfied, give to her? Thinking like this about his wife Rukmini, Krishna said, whatever desires you have in regards to serving me and me alone in pure love, free from all self-interest, are all fulfilled. In this verse 50, Krishna is saying, Bhamani, he's using the word O Bhamani, addressing Rukmini as Bhamani. Bhamani means Bhamya Prakar, O angry one, indicates that Rukmini was angry because Krishna obstructed her service of fanning him with a chamra by speaking his crooked words. Krishna said, Devi, even though you were somewhat disturbed by my words meant to break your love, your heart, which is filled with the most intense love for me, did not decrease even a little in its love. What to speak of getting destroyed? Thus I have directly seen the sterling quality of your pure love. O sinless one, who have committed no offense, even through your servitors, please forgive me for the offense I committed to you. And Vishnath quotes some Shastra. When the love between a young man and a young woman can never be destroyed, even when there is every cause for the destruction of that love, that pure love is known as prema. Then in text 52, Krishna condemns materialistic devotees who, for the sake of mundane pleasures and household life, worship the Lord with prayers like, O my Lord, may my husband give me happiness, or may my wife give me happiness. Krishna says, Ye mam bhajanti dampatye tapasa vratacharyaya kamatmano apavarge sham mohita mamamayaya. Devi, although I have the power to award spiritual liberation, lusty persons worship me with penance and vows in order to get my blessings for their mundane family life. Such persons are indeed bewildered by my illusory energy. Mohita mamamayaya. Now in text 53, Krishna elaborates upon what he said in text 52. If after obtaining me, the source of both inferior material wealth and the bliss of liberation, if someone wants the paltry bliss which can be squeezed out of the mundane opulences gained from the four ordinary human endeavors, they are most unfortunate. Even in hell, or in lower life forms like pigs and dogs, one can very easily get happiness from association with women and men and other objects. Such unfortunate souls attached to sense gratification will take birth in hell or as pigs and other low creatures in order to be completely absorbed in sense enjoyment. Such a birth is quite suitable for them. However, O mistress of the house, Griheshwari, Griha Ishwari, fortunately, you have performed devotion which releases one from the bondage of material life. But since you are eternally liberated already, others will become liberated by executing such devotional service. Rukmini may object, but then will even low-class women become liberated by devotion? Krishna says, no! Women who are envious, duplicitous and full of wicked motives for sensuous delights can never perform bhakti. In all my palaces I can find no other wife as loving as you, O most respectful one. When you were to be married, you disregarded all the kings who had assembled to seek your hand. And simply because you had heard authentic accounts concerning me, you sent a Brahmin to me with your confidential message. Among all my loving wives, you are the best. Your brother was killed by Baladev at the gambling match during the wedding of Aniruddha. Out of fear of separation from me, you did not express your sorrow or say you should not have done that. However, for the sake of common opinion, you did display slight sadness. Great joy arose from that sorrow because violence was wreaked on Rukmi, my enemy. So this discussion means that these talks that Krishna had with Rukmini, trying to joke with her and make up afterwards, they must have taken place after the marriage of Aniruddha, who is their grandson, I believe. Son of Pradyumna. Krishna continues, Devi, when the messenger sent by you to me for obtaining me was delayed, you considered the whole universe vacant and thought of giving up your life, since your body was not meant for anyone else but me. This is what you said in your message to me, quote, if I cannot obtain your mercy, I shall simply give up my vital force, which will have become weak from the severe penances I will perform. Then, after hundreds of lifetimes of endeavor, I may obtain your mercy. Krishna continues, that action remains with you, and I cannot repay you in any way for it. I can simply rejoice. Shukadev said, wrapping up the story. And so the self-satisfied Supreme Lord of the universe enjoyed with the Goddess of Fortune, engaging her in lovers' talks, Sorata Samlap, Bhagavan Jagadishwara, Sorato Ramaya Reme. This is lovers' talks, Sorata Samlap. And thus imitating the ways of human society. So the self-satisfied Lord, Dwarkadish, enjoyed through joking conjugal conversations with his wife, his personal expansion. Thus Krishna played like a husband of this world, but by his transcendental pastimes, he condemned material life by showing its inferiority to his transcendental happiness, which should be the center of everyone's life, whether they're married or single, man or woman, wife or husband. Krishna should be the center, his happiness, his pleasure, and everything should be dedicated to the center, who is none other than Sri Krishna.